Succession number 23329, reel 23.
Younger, reel 23.
Men who'd been hibernating through the winter now began to make an appearance, and there were more men bashing the circuit, as we used to say, than had done for many months. Some were quite determinedly trying to get fit, anticipating a march. Others just come to see what the outside world was like, I think. Named Gardner, who had taught English in the camp, had a small dog on a lead, and somehow, I don't know how he acquired it, probably was a stray that got into the camp somehow. But surprisingly, it had survived the winter, hadn't been eaten, and he walked it around the compound as if the circuit were Kensington Gardens. Great excitement on Good Friday when the 6,000 parcels arrived, and there were all sorts of rumours coming into the camp. We could hear explosions. We thought it was probably the British forces, but really it was the Germans blowing up bridges. But the day, the camp absolutely buzzed with excitement, mainly caused by the arrival of the parcels, but I think that engendered a lot of rumour mongering. But day followed day and nothing much happened. German Home Guard took part in an exercise just outside the camp. They were mostly First War veterans, I would say, and they were crawling around the hillocks. And some settled into some bushes for a smoke, and we watched them and rather enjoyed their game of hide and seek with their NCOs and officers. April the 5th, which was a Thursday, it was announced that we were to be marched into the Northern Redoubt, which was an area of Denmark and Schleswig-Holstein, in which the Germans planned to hold out indefinitely. C compound, that was our compound, was to go at once. There was very little time to sort out personal possessions. I threw away my folio of sketches, my manuscripts, my diary, which was really a thick wad of cards taken from the inside of cigarette tins, and Dick suggested that we hide in another compound. He reckoned that the longer we could hang on, the better our chance of being overrun. I thought it was better to stay with our own crowd rather than getting mixed up with the soldiers. And I thought we might be singled out for some sort of unpleasant attention. I think what was really worrying me was a premonition that we would be wrong to move in any but the appointed direction. However, Dick and Toby were adamant, and I went with them. we'd always decided things on a majority rules principle. So we heaved our kit bags onto our backs and we trudged across the central area to B compound. Dick had a friend in one of the barracks who said we could spend the night there. There were other airmen with the same idea, trying to find somewhere to camp, but most of them had to return to their own compound and were marched out. We were told by most of the army people in the barrack to get out too, but Dick's friend spoke for us and we were allowed to stay. Under the bunk that belonged to Dick's friend, I put a Red Cross box which contained a scone which I'd made from a little flour which I'd bought for 10 cigarettes. The flour could only have come into the camp through the Germans being paid to bring it in. I'm not quite sure how I acquired it now. Anyway, C compound marched away and we went back to our own room to see what had happened there. But army men had already been in there and the letters and diaries and manuscripts that I'd left were scattered about the floor. I could have saved them even then. And I found out later that I could have given them to a friend in the sick bay because the people in sick bay were never marched out. Anyway, we returned to B compound and we didn't get a welcome there. We were asked why didn't we find somewhere else and told we should have marched with our own compound. And Dick shouted, "You men have no idea of comradeship at all." I found that my precious scone had been stolen from the box under the bed. It was not very much, but it really mattered at that time. I felt that it wasn't taken because somebody was hungry, but because we were so unwelcome. I suggested to Dick that we see if the Yanks would have us. They were quartered in the last barrack in the compound. They had no bunks and they just had palliasses which were spread over the stone floor. Toby asked, "You guys mind if we join you?" "Hell no," they said. A very different sort of welcome from that we'd had from the British Army. So they made room on their palliasses for us. They told us about the march they'd been through. They'd had a very rough, but they had preferred it to camp life because they'd been able to get hold of plenty of food. Boy, those Jerry chickens sure are tender, said what. They'd got hold of most everything, as they put it, one way or another. But they were very cold, and quite a few of their chaps had died on the way. They said that they'd carried one chap for many miles and then discovered that he was dead. We were foraging around the camp for food and we'd found some dried peas in the cookhouse. We boiled some of them, but they were still hard and quite tasteless, but there was nothing else to eat. Then, when it was dark, one of the Americans produced a mouth organ and he played for about 3 hours, various requests, and it was quite a night, really. We were in darkness except for a cigarette glowing here and there, and there was a fat lamp flickering, but we listened to things like Silver Wings in the Moonlight. The mouth organist said, "It's kind of corny, but what the hell?" But we happily sang with him. They were mostly sentimental songs, the Americans were enjoying it, and so did we. It was a real warm, friendly gathering, quite emotional in a way.
Yeah.
Gunfire sounded continuously, and we could hear bombs not too far away. There were aircraft over the camp constantly, and a few incendiaries even fell into the camp. One burned through the roof of an A compound barrack, and we slept rather uneasily. We knew that our compound, that was the British Army people, that was to be cleared first, before B. But we'd forgotten that for some reason Germans thought airmen more useful as hostages than soldiers, and so they were going to march the Americans first. And soon the barrack was surrounded. Fortresses flew overhead, and we saw one of them hit by flak, and we saw one man come down by parachute, leaving it rather late to be a POW. The guards were watching too, and they were fascinated, so we took the opportunity to take our kit bags and steal away. We hid but returned later to the empty room, and it vacated by the Americans, our hosts of the night before, and we stayed there for the rest of the day and that night. We still had dried peas, and we boiled them to death in a billy. In fact, we were still boiling them at midnight. Then we transferred our kit to A compound. It's probably getting a bit complicated, this, but roughly we were just moving from compound to compound ahead of the Germans. Who were now marching up to round up B compound. I had forgotten to take the billy with the boiled dried peas, and I dumped my kit and ran back to get them. Toby shouted a warning, but I managed to grabbed the billy from the stove. I rushed towards the gate. The guards were about 20 yards away, and behind me was a German officer. He was bellowing, and I saw that he had a pistol pointing in my direction. I could see Dick and Toby on the other side of the fence looking rather grim. And I ran as hard as I could and waited for the bullet to hit me. The officer shouted again, but I made a last effort, got through the gateway, almost knocked down a German Feldwebel, and absurdly I said sorry and pushed past and went into A compound. Then I saw what had distracted the officer, probably why I hadn't got the bullet. There was a hole in the fence between the two compounds, and there was an orderly queue waiting to get through. The officer was ordering the queue not to move, but men were still passing through the gap. Toby walked up to the fence and said, "Tickets, please, have your tickets ready." Yeah, there were about 50 of us in A compound, and from our side of the fence we watched B compound herded out, and once they were on the road we were winkled out as well. So Toby, Dick, Ron and I were the last four prisoners to move out of the camp, just as it had been at Heidekrug. The men in sick bay, as I said, didn't go at all, and as we passed I saw my friend George Kirk and called goodbye to him. He was the one to whom I could have entrusted my diary and manuscripts and drawings. Talking of the drawings, a lot of them were caricatures of my various friends in the barrack, done in watercolour. And in the year 2000, I visited Buck Buchanan in Queensland. He had a dining table with a glass top, and under the glass were all those caricatures, which I had imagined were lost. Buck, he'd obviously picked them up and he deserved them. We had a sense of freedom, and it was just so good to be outside the barbed wire. After a few miles, we halted on a country track, and a van arrived with tins of meat paste, and these were handed out, although near us there was a guard who was shouting Schweinhunde, Englanders, and repeating it. Anyway, we tramped slowly, and sometimes on metal roads and sometimes on dirt tracks or across the fields. The straps of my kit bag, which I had actually turned my kit bag into a bag with shoulder straps, the straps rather bit into the shoulders, and they were quite painful. And we marched 15 miles that first day, which was pretty hard going considering the condition we were in. As we neared a village, we were met by officers and split into small parties, and marched to various farms in the locality. Might be 80 in one farm, 100 in another, 200 where they had large barns. There were 100 of us, mostly army, trudged along a lane, and at last reached a barn, and men were manoeuvring for space. We tried to make a way through, but there were angry shouts of no room, and no room at the inn, Toby cracked. And the guards, however, prodded the doors closed, and left us to fight it out. Make for the ladder, Dick urged, and we picked a way through the sprawling crowd. We ignored the abuse, and we kicked away hands that tried to grab our ankles and bring us down, and eventually we got up into the loft, where we found ourselves alone in masses of hay, and eventually the noise below subsided. Ron Kennett developed diarrhea during the night, and he was pretty ill and weak the next morning. The farmer, who'd been ordered by the German guards to distribute potatoes, very grudgingly dealt us each three, which were about the size of strawberries. He had them in a large black hat. So we dug up his clumps of turnips and sugar beet and charred it in a small fire, and that was our breakfast. Ron felt that he should have food, but although we advised him against it, and so we were on the road again. The day before, my greatcoat, which I had strapped to my back, I reckoned had weighed heavily and was responsible for the shoulder soreness, so I wore it and was soon very hot in it. Others were having the same difficulty, and very foolishly a lot of greatcoats were tossed away. The first halt, I strapped mine back onto the onto my pack. I still had some dried peas in the billy, but although the dust had got under the lid, so they weren't very tasty. We didn't talk much except to encourage Ron, who really was tortured. When he had to leave the column, we would wait with him at the side of the road, and we were fairly well up so that the rest of the column would shuffle past, and we'd have to hurry Ron up as the tail end of the column reached us. The guard who remained with us would become impatient, and we were well behind the main column, and we had to try and overtake them. There were bombers scudding over the treetops. There were bombs falling a mile or so away. We didn't know what the target was. We wondered if they knew who we were. We didn't want any friendly fire. Some of the guards were themselves suffering. They were elderly men, and for them the march was drudgery. Two prisoners broke from the column and stumble down the embankment making for the wood. The frying pan clashed with a pannikin, and the guard took steady aim and then lowered his rifle. The escapees vanished among the trees. Quite a lot of men escaped at the last moment from the marches and made their way through to the British lines eventually. One of the guards shortly after that staggered and was on the verge of fainting. Two or three prisoners took his rifle and his satchel and carried them until he recovered. So there was some camaraderie there. That day's march was mostly over open country, and it was fairly hard going. By evening I knew I could never take another step, but I did, and I did again. We were very worried about Ron. His pallor was frightening. How he marched, I simply don't know. But I recalled Keats' lines from Ode to a Nightingale, the weariness, the fever, and the fret. And I kept saying it over and over. It's like a tune that you can't get out of your head. 10 miles in the day we did, and we heard cheering and saw men from another compound in the farmyard. They hadn't marched that day, not because they were being rested, but because so many prisoners on the roads were disorganizing the German lines of communication. There seemed to be innumerable farms in the area, and the barn into which we were herded that night was much larger than that of the previous night. This time we made straight for the loft, and we put Ron to bed in deep hay, and he soon slept. It was still light then, and we went out into the barnyard, lit a fire, cooked our few potatoes, charred some more sugar beet, and Toby produced a bottle of used tea leaves, and we made a feeble brew. One end of the barn, behind some farm machinery, there was a railed enclosure, and behind it was a great mound of potatoes. And at our end, near the ladder leading to the loft, there were three farm horses. When the barn doors closed for the night, there were sentries posted to guard the potatoes, and they sat playing cards around a lantern. And we could hear the horses stamping on the brick floor of the barn. We lay in the straw, talked a bit, wished the barn doors could be open because it was so black, and we felt that the walls of the barn were closing in on us, but eventually we slept. I awoke to find the barn was heaving, and there was the sound of an aeroplane immediately overhead, and there were bombs falling very close by, and again the band seemed to buckle and straighten and shudder. We could hear the terrified screams of the horses down below us. They were rearing up, and one actually broke its lead, and it started running amok, really, and it was throwing itself against the walls, and we could hear. We were safe, of course, up in the loft, but we could hear men shouting in absolute terror, and they were hammering at the door to try and get the guards to release them, and they got no help. I don't know what the guards on the potatoes were doing. They're probably taking refuge themselves. They at least had the machinery to protect them.